How God distributes talents. The frosty November morning enveloped the surroundings with its cold touch. The air was saturated with the freshness and delicacy of the approaching winter. The crimson forest, not yet fully surrendered to the power of frost, majestically spread around the small temple, filled with humility and the presence of higher powers. Nature seemed to freeze, imbued with reverence for the cold winter days. Only the profound, continuous prayers emanating from the walls of the temple for centuries, healing and miraculous, gave the surrounding landscape a spiritual image. In this unique place, the Master gathered his disciples for a spiritual conversation. The temple, fascinated with its grandeur, so unique, combined with its simple architecture. It was built of ancient stones permeated with the spirit of holiness. Tall stained glass windows let in bright rays of the sun, creating a play of light and shadow on the floor and walls, as if filling the space with the living breath of angels. The quiet tolling of the bell floating in the air gave a special, enchanting atmosphere. An animated conversation took place in the cozy dining hall, specially designated for such special gatherings. Meeting the great keeper of knowledge was a significant event that no disciple wanted to miss. Dozens of fervent hearts were open to the unique knowledge transmitted by the sage, and many of the most extraordinary questions were eager to find answers from his blessed lips. Jasmine, a young woman of 35 with a hair of ripe wheat color and deep brown eyes, raised her hand. Her face shone with sincere eagerness for knowledge. Addressing the master, she was particularly respectful and delicate.
Great one, I would like to address you with the most important topic for me. Recently, we were studying parables from the gospel with the younger disciples, and one of them sparked a particularly lively discussion. I would like to know from you what its true essence is.
The master nodded with interest and leaned forward slightly, preparing to listen. Jasmine opened her notebook. On the page were a printed biblical fragment was attached. With a clear diction, she read aloud.
"For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received 5 talents immediately put them to use and made 5 talents more. He who had received 2 talents made 2 more in the same way. And he who had received 1 talent went and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. A long time has passed. The master returned and called all servants to report to him. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' He who had received 1 talent came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours.' But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant! You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have given my money to grow, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with a profit. Take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For he who has, to him it will be given, and it will be given in abundance. But from him who has not, that which he has shall be taken away. And this unfit servant shall be taken and thrown out into the darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'"
Jasmine finished reading and looked inspiringly at the sage, eager to hear the true interpretation of all the underlying meanings. Smiling broadly, the sage rubbed his hands with visible pleasure.
"Well, let's contemplate,"
he cheerfully replied and posed a counter question to the audience.
"What do you think? Whose image is hidden under that very master who distributed talents to the servants?
Apparently, in the kingdom of heaven, that very master is God himself. And he distributes talents to people, each according to his own.
The inquiring disciple expressed her opinion.
Correct, Jasmine. Certainly, in the gospel, the direct text implied an ancient monetary measure by the term talent. Thus, silver was measured in earlier times. But even in that sense, the word talent, which we know, perfectly reflects the intent of the parable. God gives talents to people. People multiply them. They begin to develop them. Someone is endowed with a voice, sings beautifully, hits the high and low notes, and develops further to sing even better. To someone, the gift of dancing is given. Then they can develop their agility, hone their skills. To someone, the gift of eloquent preaching is given. And people come from other countries to hear them preach. If such a person develops and multiplies their talent, then God rejoices. I gave them a talent, and they have prospered in it. They have grown. Then he gives even more abilities, opportunities, and strength to the person, so they may serve others, bring good and light, do good deeds. But the lazy one buried their talent. They were idle. They didn't develop it. They didn't derive anything from that gift. According to the parable, they covered their laziness by accusing the master of cruelty. I was afraid and went and buried your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. That is, there was a risk that by investing the master's money they would lose everything, but they could have gained more, and they chose not to take risks and not to develop, but to leave everything as it was. For this, God punished them, took away their talent, and gave it to the one who already had 10. Because God said, "For everyone who has will be given more, and they will have an abundance, but from the one who has not, even what they have will be taken away." If at the end of the conditional period that the Lord gave them, a person did not make use of what was gifted to them, then it will be taken away from them. But to the one who gratefully applies the gifts of the Almighty, multiplies them, and glorifies them, to them the reward will come above what they already have. Therefore, it is necessary to know oneself, to discern. If God has given strength, energy, some abilities, then direct them towards serving people and God. All this energy that is given must be realized. But if someone does not do this, begins to be lazy, then later they realize that they no longer have strength or energy. God has taken everything away from them. Therefore, all this energy that God gives, all strengths, supernatural abilities, must be immediately directed towards serving people and God. Only then will we be well. Our talents will multiply. And the one who starts to become lazy, who does not develop their abilities, later bites their elbows, because they did not manifest what God gave them. They did not realize these possibilities, abilities, energy. They directed their thoughts towards themselves, towards personal interest, personal needs, and thereby destroyed their talent.
The disciples, eyes wide open, listened attentively to the words of the sage. Many had read this parable multiple times or heard about it, but in his interpretation, each listener found a reflection of their own personal story. One of the disciples, an elegant woman of mature age, slowly raised her hand. This disciple's name was Paulina. Her silvery hair was neatly arranged in a tidy bun. Although the years had passed, her poise and grace elicited admiration and great respect from the younger disciples. The keeper granted her the floor.
"Our great master,"
the woman bowed her head,
"the meaning of your words resonates deeply in my heart. It can often be observed, especially in the case of people of my generation, when in youth a talent was given, but the person lacked the wisdom to use this divine gift correctly. there was not enough intelligence to develop it and to prosper in it for the benefit of people and for God. And with age, a person may realize this, but they no longer have the strength and opportunities to engage in what they are capable of because their time has passed. I now understand that God gave me enough time, but there was a lack of energy, intelligence, strength, or something else.
In Paulina's eyes, there sparkled a repentance which, upon meeting the loving gaze of the keeper of knowledge, immediately turned into the joy of acceptance. The woman rejoiced in the understanding that had come to her. Inside her, a strong feeling of regret for missed opportunities flared up, and at the same time, an unconditional, pure love for God, who generously bestowed talents upon her, which over the years had not received the proper development. She shared these feelings with the master and other disciples.
In my youth, I was seriously passionate about the art of debate. My talent was in the oratorical skill. Perhaps some of you have heard about it, but now it has grown into real tournaments. People organize serious competitions and engage in this professionally.
In those days, this sport was just beginning to develop.
Bitterness from the irreversibility of missed opportunities could be heard in the woman's voice, but at the same time, it was evident how eagerly the disciple immersed herself in these memories.
I remember with how much zeal and excitement I addressed the audience. I knew the secret of self-confidence. I knew how to captivate the audience so much that at some point it seemed to me as if I could persuade them of anything. I devoted a lot of time to preparation, but when I stepped on the stage, I demonstrated ease, improvised, excelled, and people listened to me.
The disciples looked at the woman with admiration. Paulina always stood out for her conciseness and clarity of speech, while skillfully emphasizing the essence of her thoughts. However, none of the disciples knew about her past as a brilliant speaker. Everyone was eagerly awaiting the continuation of her story.
At 27, I got married. My husband didn't support my passion. He thought it was ridiculous and unnecessary. I still remember his cruel words. They are forever etched in my memory like a splinter that I still can't pull out. What a pastime! Proving your truth in public like a madwoman. I'm ashamed of you. A woman should be quiet and modest, sit and not stand out. She should do everything for her husband. Go argue as much as you like in the housing and utilities sector. There you'll find plenty of worthy opponents. His harsh words hurt me deeply, and gradually I began to doubt my calling myself. It seemed to me that I stopped succeeding, and my husband kept telling me all the time that I had no talent, that I wouldn't achieve anything, and I was just wasting my time. I started speaking less and less, and then I started doubting myself so much that I gave up all activities altogether. I watched other speakers a lot, and I kept comparing myself to them all the time. And then I was so overwhelmed by these vile thoughts that I finally gave up. I started convincing myself that my husband was right, and it was all a frivolous and unnecessary pursuit. Then a child was born, and all personal ambitions took a back seat. That's how I buried this talent in the ground. I fortunately divorced my husband years later, but the lost opportunities and lost skills turned out to be too high a price for an unsuccessful marriage. Now, many of my friends with whom we competed have become famous speakers and coaches. They travel the world and give lessons in the art of oratory. Many of them train famous politicians and other public figures. And I started building another career and succeeded there too, but I never felt in myself other talents like in public speaking. I regret not continuing in that direction. Now I don't have enough time and energy for these activities anymore, and I don't have the agility to compete with the young ones anymore.
The woman sighed heavily and looked up at the master. His supportive, warm energy enveloped Paulina, and the bright ray of the all-forgiving great love seized her soul. In that moment, with a light smile, she accepted her mistake and, addressing all the young disciples, said,
"So, have zeal and respect for God's gifts. If you have abilities, develop them."
Everyone applauded, paying tribute to the person who had gracefully accepted the weight of her mistake. Paulina sensually placed both palms on her chest, thanking the disciples for their attention. The master encouraged the disciple with a kind look and spoke.
Paulina's story is a very good example. There is also service to people in this, to show on your own mistakes how not to do it. Indeed, with age, it becomes clear which talents were given to you, and comes the realization of which power was actually bestowed upon you. And if you don't use it, then this subtle energy, blessing, goes to others whose talents are developing and to whom God gives even more as a reward. And when all of this is gone, then nothing can be done anymore. That's why God said, "And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." A deserving punishment and reprimand from the Lord to the servant who did not multiply the gift given to him, who did not want to serve for the good of people and in mercy to God, using the abilities given to him. Therefore, it is important to remember this parable that Jesus Christ told to his disciples and think, am I manifesting my talents? When I woke up this morning, God gave me energy. Where am I directing this energy? To justify, to defend my vices, to negative emotions maybe, to bad thoughts. So what am I developing in myself? What a disgrace. I'd better direct it to good deeds. Therefore, we must think where our energy is directed, to a good cause or to a bad one. If a person directs this energy to themselves, to their selfishness and thoughts of how badly they live and how to make it better for themselves, then they will truly feel bad. There will truly be weeping and gnashing of teeth. But if a person directs this energy to ensure that other people are well, if they care about those around them, live for God, want to do something bright, good, then God will give even more talents, even more abilities, and grace to that person.
A tall and slender disciple with dark fair hair, 28 years old, decided to ask a question. Georg was a gifted artist, sensual and thoughtful. He often indulged in daydreams and poured his emotions with paint on canvas. That's why his paintings were always full of depth and conveyed the most diverse inner feelings of the creator.
I wanted to ask you, Master. You see, God gives each person talents, to a greater or lesser extent, each in their own way. He endowed me with a taste and gave me the ability to see the world through the prism of visual art. I am very grateful for this. So for me, talent is something through which I can serve people, realize my abilities, and do it creatively, as if co-creating the universe with God. But often people use their talent not for the good of others, but exclusively for themselves. That is, they also develop in this strive, but only to get the cup, earn a medal, like a dog at a show. I have such an example. In the community of artists, there are characters who make a living by reproducing great masterpieces and selling them at half price. Or for example, there are craftsmen who paint pictures exclusively for certain competitions and exhibitions where they can earn money. It doesn't matter to them what the theme is, whether they want to paint these pictures themselves or not. They just paint for the sake of fame and money. And so it goes in any sphere. Talented people can be found who use their abilities only to outshine others and thereby individualize themselves. Why does someone use talent to shine, while someone else may not be as bright but still dedicate their work to others?
The sage met Georg's question with a gaze full of kindness and understanding. Straightening his thick beard, the master replied,
"First of all, God gives people talents so that we may serve others. Of course, it often happens that people direct the development of their talents towards strengthening their pride, or they want to show that they are better than others, that others are worse than them. Or many other examples can be cited of using talents for one's own benefit or gain. Many vices develop in this way. Such a talent will turn to evil. God gives us energy, and where we direct it depends only on us. For example, someone decided to use it to feed their selfishness, to put themselves on some pedestal. Then it will go badly for them, because they do not serve God, do not help people with their talent, but worry excessively about themselves. In this case, this energy will be destructive. It will bring disappointments, sufferings, and destruction. Often if someone thinks about fame, all sorts of negative emotions will immediately overwhelm them, because where there is fame, there are always comparisons. Such a person will constantly compare themselves with others and think, someone has become more famous and I have become less. Here I encountered failure. Someone has become better than me and I have become worse. And constant thoughts, sufferings, experiences, a whole flood of negative emotions right away. Why is that?
The master surveyed the audience with a questioning gaze, and then answered himself.
Because they have started thinking about themselves, nurturing their ego, that's the whole reason. This means that the talent, the energy given to them, they directed towards self-destruction, because they aimed not where they should have, but began to worry about themselves in one way or another. That's how people start gnawing at themselves from the inside, destroying themselves. And another person, who has this energy, directed it towards helping people, doing something good, something light. And it doesn't matter how many medals they have, how much money they are offered for the work they already do for free, public opinion doesn't matter, and no judgment matters. What matters is that God watches to ensure that this energy is directed towards serving people, serving higher powers, and then the talent multiplies. Because we serve God, serve people, and therefore elevated emotions arise in us. The brightest thoughts appear, the best states come at that moment. This energy transforms into the best, the lightest, the most sublime in us. And then we create ourselves, we increase ourselves. Therefore, it's not about who got which medals in some championship. It's all nonsense. If a person thinks about who will get which medals in a championship, it speaks of the wrong direction of energy. It would be better for them to think about how to overcome themselves, to put more effort and diligence into improving their own result, to become stronger and faster, to develop willpower, to set a good example for others. At that moment, one should think about people or how better to serve God, and not about how to serve their own selfishness. In this case, the egoist will imagine themselves a hero. Few people achieve something in life, but everyone imagines themselves a superhero. Everyone does it, and the less they think about helping people, the more they imagine themselves as superheroes. So this whole energy that God gave goes to the sick imagination. He won't even get real medals, but he's already imagined everything, inflating his own ego. And right away, a bunch of negative emotions appeared. I imagined myself as a superhero, but nobody recognizes me. How can this be? Why wasn't I put on a pedestal? Why aren't you praising me? Few people receive medals, but everyone imagines themselves as a champion. So the energy went in the wrong direction. So real talents, true energy, a person has buried in the ground. Because they should have directed it towards serving God and helping people. And then elevated states would have immediately come to them, just from the mere thought of it. This is the real manifestation of our energy, our talents, not in who got which medals.
Georg looked at the master with enthusiasm. In his eyes, there was immense gratitude and spiritual fervor. In the master's words, he saw the right direction for his troubled thoughts and found confirmation of his hunches about the righteousness of the chosen path. His face expressed deep concentration and respect for the sage. The next question came from Adriana. Fiery and energetic by nature, she was a bold explorer. Her thirst for knowledge captivated her, filling her life with travels, interesting encounters, and a thirst for exciting adventures. Her piercing brown eyes seemed to penetrate through the darkness, while her black unruly hair emphasized her wild spirit and determination.
Beloved Master, I've often been told that I have a good voice. I don't notice it myself, and it seems quite ordinary to me. Recently, when the mentors were assigning tasks, I was given the assignment to make calls precisely because I have a suitable voice. So this is my talent. I didn't want to do it. It was uncomfortable and unpleasant for me. I wrote a letter asking for permission to be given another task. Does it mean that at that moment I was thinking about myself, succumbing to weak thoughts? I just needed to overcome my discomfort, cross some threshold, and following your words, I would have felt good, right?
Of course, Adriana.
The sage nodded in agreement.
Things would definitely turn out well. You should have thought like this. Oh, wow. I'm going to make calls now and help so many people. Convey good news to many people. There are so many unhappy people in terrible conditions, suffering, in ignorance. How can I help them? How can I save them? The only way is to inform these people about the great knowledge. I will start calling now. Inform them that the great knowledge exists, and people will be able to somehow get out of the suffering, ignorance, and horror in which they live. And my voice will help me with this. The tutors are sure that this is my talent, and that my voice is capable of setting people on an elevated tone, inspiring them, creating the right connection. So I need to trust them and believe in the power of my voice.
The sage's words brought repentance to Adriana's heart. She immediately felt regretful for underestimating herself and the importance of the task assigned to her. She immediately wanted to resume making calls, but this time with an open heart, inspired by the master's words. His response inspired the girl. Meanwhile, the keeper of knowledge continued to teach.
Whether you have a good voice or not doesn't matter. You shouldn't think about it. And you shouldn't think about yourself and some discomfort, laziness, or other lowly things. There are always a multitude of excuses, some pretexts why you shouldn't do it. You want to take some other job, for example, washing dishes. This job is much simpler and clearer. It doesn't mean it's not as important. It's also a responsible task, but of a different kind.
The sage explained, reading between the lines.
People often want to find some easy way to put in less effort. That's how people often think about themselves and start suppressing their talents, closing themselves off from them, not allowing their abilities to flourish. Although if there are opportunities to help people, serve God, and develop talents, we must use them. So, Adriana,
the sage turned directly to the disciple again.
Imagine how many people you can help, convey the great knowledge, lift them out of the mud and ignorance. With your calls, you can alleviate their suffering. And if you hear negativity on the other end of the line, it's just another confirmation of how much these people need your help, even if they don't realize it themselves yet.
The disciple sitting next to Adriana patted her supportively on the shoulder. The keeper of knowledge created an incredibly kind atmosphere in which the disciples could share any of their experiences without being ashamed of their mistakes and without fearing being misunderstood. Everyone began to applaud the emerging circle of support, and the girl straightened her back definitively, ready to approach her task again with an open heart and great pleasure when the time comes. One of the disciples, Oliver, stood up from his seat and, with the master's permission, addressed Adriana with a light Baltic accent.
I was also on such a task, and I experienced the same feelings at the very beginning. But then the senior disciples were able to set me up in such a way that I didn't even think about what kind of voice I had. Didn't think about my feelings, but just thought about my goal all the time. To convey to them that there is another way, there is freedom and ease, there is divine love. There is a master who will help to learn and feel all this. And as soon as I thought about it, I wanted to make more and more calls, and it became my favorite task.
Thank you, Oliver, for sharing your experience.
The master responded joyfully.
This is how you should think about any task you start, and then your talents will multiply. We should think about people, about what good we can bring to them. Think about God. And then just from the mere thought, we will feel good. Our souls will immediately feel wonderful. And when a person refuses the opportunities offered to them, their soul immediately feels scanty. Some fears, discomfort, some laziness arise in them, and their soul feels scanty because they thought about themselves, and they missed this grace. Therefore, we must immediately tune in to something good, light, kind. We must remember that by doing this good now, we will immediately feel good in our souls. God already gives a signal. You are on the right path when you already feel good in your soul. And if you've already started doing it, embodying it, everything immediately becomes wonderful. You immediately start flying on wings because you've started realizing your talent.
The disciples looked attentively at the master. Their faces expressed complete immersion in spiritual understanding. They not only heard the words, but also felt their energy, as if touching the divine truth. Everything the sage said resonated within them and demanded immediate practice. However, there were still plenty of questions for the conversation with the master, and each disciple eagerly savored moments of his precious attention. Ilona raised her hand. She was a young disciple in her early 30s. The girl had an extraordinary sense of style, astonishingly combining elegance with youthful mischief. She often wore contact lenses, skillfully matching their color to the shade of her rather extravagant outfits.
Master, I heard a phrase that says a person has only 1% of talents, and the remaining 99% is work. Returning to the parable, can we say that when a person had 5 talents and multiplied them, is that the work they did? Because why did it become 10 from 5? Thanks to work. After all, you yourself said that it doesn't matter whether you have a voice or not. The main thing is the desire to serve and help. Is this the multiplication?
We're not talking about such talents as dancing or singing. Not necessarily creative ones. There is energy, and it is given to us in the morning. We wake up in the morning, and we have some energy, some strength, and we can transform this energy into a higher state through our actions if we serve people. Service transforms this energy into a higher one. This is receiving greater talents. Not that we received more medals, more titles, but we transformed this energy into a higher energy. Or we will transform this energy into something lower. We start thinking about ourselves, feeding our ego, and this energy that was given to us turns into negative emotion, into a state of degradation, into thoughts about ourselves. That's the main process. The energy became worse. It means we buried that talent, destroyed ourselves with that energy. We misused the gift that was given to us in the morning. And if the energy turned into something more bright and high, that is receiving greater talents, then we transformed 5 talents into 10. That is, this energy was coarse and it became more subtle. It's not that we sang and God gave us the talent to draw and engage in artistic whistling. The point is not that we were given more abilities, but that this energy transformed into a more subtle, higher energy. That's the main talent. And it doesn't matter if a person doesn't have any obvious talents, but there will be that same energy. And thanks to this energy, they help people with all their might. In any way, they serve God in any way, trying to do something with what they already have. And this energy, which they have in the morning, transforms into a higher energy. That's those same 10 talents.
The disciple pondered for a moment, then asked again,
"So, can any action be done? And if it's a strong deed, if you are tuned to God, will talents be revealed?"
So even through washing dishes, floors, through absolutely any task, can you multiply energy if you do it with love for God and with thoughts about people? And then any task of power can already become a talent. To reveal care, accuracy, attentiveness, and so on. If you think that you are helping people right now and keep the right attitude, will it increase and enhance that energy?
Of course,
confirmed the keeper.
Absolutely, any task can be. This energy exists, and through the task, we begin to transform it into a higher energy. We help people serve God.
The words were requested by Cornelia. The charming brunette woman with curly short hair and large earrings raised her hand, adoringly looking at the master.
Great one, I thought. Wouldn't it be that through talents in us, the ego grows? You possess these talents, grow hierarchically, identify yourself with some personality. How should one relate to this when you need to maintain a face according to hierarchy, but also help people? I understand that you often identify with this personality until the moment when you are shown that there's nothing to be proud of. Don't blow up a soap bubble. But still, how should one relate to this?
We need to switch gears. There's the keeping face part, and when needed, we switch and play another necessary role. For example, right now I'm keeping face. But let's say, when I was walking towards you, I only stepped on the gray tiles on the floor and avoided the white ones. I regressed to my childhood and played around.
The disciples laughed. It was quite challenging to imagine the great keeper of knowledge being so straightforward. The sage also shone with a light, wide smile.
Yes, can you imagine? Here I am, fooling around. And then when I'm about to leave you, I'll probably only step on the white tiles. There must be some rules in this game.
Again, the master's words sparked a wave of laughter. A light atmosphere filled everything around, but the master skillfully redirected everyone's attention to the serious flow of the conversation.
So I switch. Here with you, I'm keeping face. I have some role here. And before and after that, I am who I want to be. The main thing is to know how to switch, not to identify with the role, with what we do. You have to be able to be a bit of a fool for a while, and then take off that mask and be someone else at the right moment. It's hardest for people not to get attached to the role of some senior figure. Pride comes into play here. If a person has been entrusted with a senior role, they immediately pin a medal on themselves. If they particularly like this role, they don't want to leave it, but they must. You need to know when to disidentify. If suddenly you particularly like some role and you start identifying with it, then you're forgetting about the soul. That's why we act silly, play the fool, joke, laugh, then snap. And we disidentify with that role. And then we immediately feel our essence.
Cornelia suddenly looked somewhat detached at the sage, but a second later her gaze brightened. She spoke with excitement in her voice.
Master, I just had such an unexpected insight. It's like I got hit over the head with a hammer. So, if you look at what's being broadcast everywhere now, the whole world is only concerned with itself, feeding its own selfishness, and because of that, all the problems arise. In the spiritual path, it's when a person stops thinking about themselves. Now, everything and everywhere is focused only on thinking about oneself. From every corner, hundreds of psychologists are shouting that you need to delve into yourself, listen to your desires, think about what we want. But it's all such a deception. It's a real trap. And the whole world around us, except for this little island that the master created, is based on this lie, striving to get higher education, find a dream job, and so on. It's all thoughts about oneself, selfishness. And it turns out that the world is woven 99% from this lie. And only this tiny, tiny island where the master imparts knowledge to us is capable of living differently. It's as if those who manage to find truth amidst layers of endless deception have remained on this island. And as I'm saying this now, I immediately realize that God created this too. This illusion, Maya, God also created it so that a person going through all the suffering would wake up and understand that you can't worry about your ego. You have to think about people. And the essence of all knowledge lies in this. Forget about yourself and think about people. Otherwise, you'll suffer.
The woman looked at the other disciples with jubilant feelings and returned her gaze to the sage, receiving in response a huge impulse of love. The keeper of knowledge gifted the girl with a bright feeling, stimulating within her that very elevated state. The disciple, with eyes shining from the realization of important truth, sat down, placing her palms on her face. It was as if she was trying to stop the kaleidoscope of sensations that had overwhelmed her. The great sage, with joy in his heart, supported Cornelia's enthusiastic feelings and responded empathetically to her.
Yes, you understood everything correctly. The process goes like this. Because a bug has reincarnated into a human, immediately, it cannot become smart. It's foolish, underdeveloped. The bug can only think about itself. Then it suffers and suffers. It agonizes. So the process goes to make it smarter, little by little. And when it has suffered enough and agonized enough, it turns to religion, seeks some kind of solution. The bug starts to become smarter. And when it turns to religion, it finds a normal teaching there, where they explain to it how to live for people, how to serve God. Smart, good thoughts begin to be explained to it. And slowly it begins to understand that, as it turns out, when it serves people, it feels good. And when it thinks about itself, the bug, it feels bad. And gradually, it gets smarter like that. It starts to understand what it needs to do. Many teachings speak directly about this, but few understand it. People go around and put different candles in church to pass exams, so that some relative or some drunkard doesn't drink. They think about their comfort. They're only interested in personal gain, instead of grasping the teaching and understanding that they need to help people, serve God. People don't want to comprehend this, and then they suffer with these drunkards, exams, nothing works out. And in the end, they start to understand the essence that actually God wanted to convey to them through all religions, all teachings.
The woman listened to the keeper of knowledge, not taking her eyes off of him. She was experiencing many emotions from his words, enjoying every moment of the conversation. She was in complete harmony with herself and experienced unity with spirituality, which made her face glow with happiness and her heart beat stronger. With such a bright feeling, Cornelia passed the word to another disciple, who raised his hand and was already invited by the master to speak.
I want to clarify, Great One. Am I understanding correctly that the main thing is to serve selflessly to the utmost? Not to stop, because otherwise there will be no development of talents. Only at the limit of all possibilities will there be some progress and development, and otherwise there won't.
The master's face became pensive. He looked closely at the disciple. He was a mature man, 47 years old, with a noble streak of gray in his hair. The sparkling earring in his ear revealed a rebellious spirit.
The mindset is important here,
summarized the keeper.
You can also do something mechanically, even if at the limit of your strength. They gave us a job, and we, like silent oxen, do it mechanically. Even if our strength runs out, we start working and doing it to exhaustion. But you can do it with prayer. with the right attitude. The attitude is the most important thing. A person can be in a bad mood before work, not understand the goal, not understand why they need to do all this. They will suffer not wanting to do this work. This is all a very bad attitude, and such work will be done mechanically. From such work, our energy does not become sublime. But another thing is to work with a blessing. Things go better with prayer, and there will already be a different approach to the same matter. You need to learn to do everything with prayer, not to work to exhaustion, to fall on all fours by evening. It's not about that. It's about the attitude. You need to do any work with the right attitude. You must always remember that you serve God. There should be such an attitude. I am serving God now. I am praying to Him through this work. This work helps me serve people, develop, strengthen my spirit. And to do with a bad attitude means to think negatively. There are so many people. Why should I bother for them? You can't please everyone anyway, and so on. And we can do the same work, but with a different attitude, and the result will be different. With one attitude, we destroy ourselves, and with the help of another, we become angels. You need to do any work with the right attitude, then everything will be fine.
I understand.
The disciple replied briefly. His gaze was fixed and deep, as if he had momentarily plunged into a brief self-analysis. Absolute self-sacrifice and dedication to the master reflected on his face. He perceived every word of his as truth and listened to it attentively. Meanwhile, the master nodded towards Melissa. The disciple stretched out her hand, and several rows of amber beads slid down along in an instant. The bright appearance of the disciple attracted universal attention. Her hair was dyed in a pink shade, harmoniously emphasizing her large gray eyes.
Keeper, does it happen that a person feels like they are not allowed to develop their talents? For example, he says, I want to do such and such according to my abilities and talents, but I'm not allowed. I want to sing, dance, but they tell me to make calls or clean toilets. And the person doesn't understand that they are actually helping him and herself. After all, the power sees a person's talents, and the person wants to do what's easier. For instance, the person thinks he/she has a talent for cooking and there's nothing else. But they tell him, you have a talent for saving people, conducting rituals. It just takes some time to transform the energy, to raise it higher, and then you will reveal even what you didn't see or know. Am I reasoning correctly?
Yes, that's right,
responds the keeper.
If a person insists that they want a job according to their abilities, it means they want to do what interests them, what they like. So at that moment, they're only thinking about themselves. But whether it's necessary or not for people, they don't care about that. For example, one disciple is interested in photography. They're skilled at it, and it's their hobby, and they're very good at it. But at the moment, this skill won't be useful in any task. They tell them that there are no events right now. There's no need for photography, but they need to go help the brothers and sisters sort books in the library. But this disciple insists and says, why don't you let me do what I want to do? What I'm good at. I'll take better photos than other disciples. I'll do it better than they'll sort these books. At that moment, the disciple is only thinking about what he wants. Photography is a good thing, but when it can serve people, leave memorable photos, bring joy, capture important events and moments. Of course, it's a noble thing. For example, to photograph a rare Bengal tiger for those people who will never go to India and see it live. But in a situation where you really need to engage in an important task, you need to set aside your desires and think about people first and about what is really important now. You had better go and sort the books on the shelves, put them in the right order to make it easier for disciples to find the necessary literature. This is a good deed in service to others. Again, it's important to distinguish what's interesting only to you from what may be interesting to people and God, and to prioritize that.
But it's so difficult, Master,
says Melissa thoughtfully.
How can we learn to adapt when a person has been accustomed to thinking about themselves for decades? Even the desire to be closer to the Master, closer to the power, is that also, in a good sense, thinking about oneself? How can one reorient oneself, remove self-imposed suggestions, genuinely take an interest and live by helping others so that it becomes a value for one's soul? After all, we also reflect on ourselves when we ask ourselves such questions.
You have to study yourself,
explains the Master.
Ask yourself, why do I want this? Why do I want that? Where did this come from? What personalities are at work within me? Which centers are active? If a person thought about this, then they could understand it. And when we start doing something just because we wanted to, then it's unclear where this idea came from and why we need it. People can have different desires and different ideas. From here, the world has seen all kinds of useless occupations and hobbies.
The Master demonstratively covered his face with his palm, which elicited smiles from the disciples.
Someone collects strange collections, all sorts of Barbie dolls or soda cans from around the world. At some auctions, these cans are bought for huge sums. Somewhere, some crazy people stretch a rope between building roofs and walk on it without safety equipment, for no apparent reason. Who will benefit from a person falling and becoming disabled for life? This will only bring suffering to their loved ones if people began to understand and try to understand the nature of their hobbies. They would learn many interesting things about themselves. Many collectors and stunt performers have disturbed psyches. Some energy is distributed incorrectly. The sense of fear disappears, or the sense of thrill awakens, some insatiability. If these people began to laugh at themselves, to extinguish these meaningless desires within themselves in order to disidentify from this madness, then they could detach from it and start doing something useful. That's the only way. Yes, of course, ignorance is all around us. We were raised in a way that damaged our psyche. But the only way is to start observing ourselves, to start looking at what I consist of, which processes are happening within me, which personalities, where it all came from, what is within me. If a person could see all this, then they would become free. Therefore, self-observation, mindfulness, is the only way to free oneself from all selfishness, from all vices at once. Because Atman studies and observes all of this. And thus, the more we observe ourselves, the more we study ourselves, the more we disconnect from all false personalities, from egoism, from thoughts about ourselves. Our Atman begins to detach from all identifications and finds itself. This is the only way to salvation.
The great sage, glancing at the clock, rose from his seat, thereby marking the end of the conversation. All the disciples followed him. With their hands folded in prayer gestures over their chests, they prepared for joint prayer. The time spent in dialogue with the great sage flew by like a single moment. This moment has always been an exceptional, unique, and inspiring experience of being. The proximity of his words, his teachings, and his presence were priceless gifts. The conversation with the Keeper of Knowledge not only awakened their minds, but also illuminated their hearts with the light of truth. During the prayer, each disciple distinctly felt the warmth of the energy of pure knowledge glowing inside them, transmitted by the Master. Main Theses. 1. God gives a person talents in order to develop them in service to people and higher powers. 2. The energy that God gives us in the mornings should be used for good, so that it grows and multiplies. 3.
if the energy given by God is directed towards selfishness, it will only bring suffering to the individual. 4. Any task of the power is an opportunity to apply one's talent. Any task that requires diligence, overcoming oneself, and discomfort develops us. This means that the energy spent on its execution can multiply if it is accepted and performed with the aim of serving people in God. 5. One should learn to easily change roles and disidentify with the personalities that arise as a result of playing these roles. 6. The most important thing in any endeavor is the right attitude. One should think about serving people and how much benefit it will bring them. Then there will be strength and a lot of positive energy to accomplish what is planned. 7. If you only do what interests you, egoism will develop. One should, first of all, think about what deeds and activities will benefit God and other people. 8. Self-observation and mindfulness will help to get rid of thoughts about oneself and become a happy person.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.